Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers! Welcome to hell! Sorry, wrong recording. Welcome to issue 144 of the Bugle, that's it. The world's last best hope for humanity, with me, Andy Zaltzman, of One Fixed Abode, somewhere in London, as I recall. I'll ask around after the recording. And joining me from New York City, it's the man who would have discovered penicillin if that prick Fleming hadn't got there first. The man who could have led the Allied troops to victory at El Alamein if the self-proclaimed Montgomery hadn't undercut him and done it on the cheap. The man who might have given Neil Armstrong a piggyback onto the moon if he'd been A, born, B, an astronaut, and C, allowed out of the house by his mummy. It's John, the lawnmower of everlasting vengeance, Oliver!
Hello, Andy! Hello, Buglers. Well, Andy, I'm not in New York.
Once again, 2 weeks in a row.
I'm not in New York. Last week, I was in Cleveland, Ohio. This week, I'm in Los Angeles, which is very much the Cleveland of California. Now, LA is known to many as the City of Angels, and to others, the City of Broken Dreams, the Graveyard of Optimism, and where hope crawls to die. Now, I'm here shooting another episode of Community this week, and it's been a very odd place to watch the scenes unfolding in Egypt. Yesterday definitely was one of those where were you moments. Where were you when Mubarak spoke to Tahrir Square? I remember where I was, Andy. I was in a trailer on the Paramount lot watching Al Jazeera and about to go and pretend to play the piano during a 15-second Glee parody. It's what I always thought I'd be doing when Egypt's government teetered on the brink of collapse, and it turns out I was right.
That's basically what I was doing when Kennedy was shot. So this is Bugle 144, 144, coincidentally the number of hours by which I've overslept my alarm clock over the last 3 days. The one was promising, but back on form since then. 144, also, of course, what these Three Stooges used to say when doing their traditional pre-show testicle count. It's never been fully explained, and their post-mortems were redacted by the state, so I guess we'll never know. And 144, so the number of times Henry VIII said, before saying yes in response to the question, do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife? On more than one occasion, so maybe the warning signs were there for Mrs. VIII. Also, the number of different pairs of socks that Scraffle McQuirt tried on before buying a pair of dark grey cotton Lycra blend socks in his triumphant performance at the 2008 World Indecision Championships. Brilliantly indecisive performance that earned him his big money move from the Whitehaven Waverers to European champions Atletico de Madrid. And of course the Waverers used his transfer fee to buy US star Le Breakfast Roussel from the NIHFUVIEL franchise Miami Dither. And as always, a section of the Bugle's going straight in the bin. This week, a Your Money section, including under the floorboards or under the mattress. What is the safest way to invest your cash in today's global markets? Plus, an exclusive interview with the leading economist Laquane Hipsbludger, the author of the influential financial advice books, including I'll Give You My Pig, Bartering in the Modern Housing Market, I'm Not Pulling My Trousers Back Up Until I Get a 20% Discount, How to Save Money in a High Street Clothing Store, and Barking for Bargains, How a Threatening Dog Can Slash Your Weekly Shopping Bill. In the bin.
Top story this week, they Sphinx it's all over. It is now. Or maybe it isn't. Is it? Hold on, what the fuck is happening in Egypt? Andy, Egypt has long been seen as a centre of stability in a volatile region, but it turns out that anyone can seem stable when their feet are nailed to the floor. In fact, when your feet are nailed to the floor, stability is often the least of your many concerns. And things have been happening very quickly in Egypt, not just over the last 48 hours, but even this morning. In 45 minutes ago, Mubarak was technically still in power, and now as we talk, he's gone. In fact, he left while you were on the train to the Bugle, if that's not true, Andy.
That's right. I've got some already out-of-date jokes about President Mubarak that were written while I was having my lunch.
It really has been an amazing couple of days. Protests continued in Egypt all week, culminating in spectacular scenes on Thursday when, after rumours all day that Mubarak was about to stand down, millions of people gathered together in Tahrir Square and President Mubarak showed that he still has the magic touch in that he managed to somehow make a group of unbelievably angry people somehow even angrier than they already were. What had happened was that Leon Panetta, head of the CIA, let it slip Thursday morning that Mubarak was going to be resigning that night after indications from the military that they were about to take over power in Cairo. Mubarak then announced he was going to go on TV in Egypt later that evening, and everyone presumed that this was going to be the announcement that all the protesters had been waiting for. Everyone presumed that not even Mubarak would have the barefaced balls to go in front of a crowd on the brink of revolution, having seemingly completely lost the faith of his country, the international community, and even his military, and just announced that he was staying. But he somehow conspired to handle the situation in the worst possible way, keeping people hanging around for nearly an hour before delivering a decision that essentially flipped the bird at his entire country. And in doing so, he really pulled what is now known as a full LeBron James. It was like he gathered his entire country around televisions for a dictatorial version of ESPN's The Decision, ending by saying, OK, here it is. I'm going to take my talents right back to my office where I'm going to still be president. You can all go f*** yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, John, I mean, you and I, we have both seriously let down some live audiences in our time. But,
no doubt.
But I'm not sure I've ever had a reaction quite like that. Maybe a gig I did in Killarney in Ireland once, but I think that was more to people wanting the disco to start than anything particularly personal about me. But Mubarak, I mean, it's almost like he deliberately tanked the gig, didn't he? I mean, it was extraordinary. The entire world was watching. The crowds in Cairo and across Egypt were seething with febrile excitement, barely contained preemptive euphoria about the successful culmination of an extraordinary popular uprising. History was in the baking, and the time was about to go ping to tell everyone it was ready. You could cut the atmosphere with a Vegemite sandwich. This was a landmark moment in modern democracy being played out to the entire planet. Seismic social change, live and uninterrupted from Cairo. And then on came Mubarak, with his people demanding change, a new beginning, an end to the old order, and he promised them a full report into what had happened. Which, you know, maybe you'd have thought the crowd would have responded saying, well, it's not entirely what we asked for, but, you know, it's better than a kebab skewer in the eye, isn't it? I think there's another possible interpretation of this, John, and that is that what happened yesterday was that the broadcast cut out early from Mubarak just before he said, nah, just kidding, I'm off. I can't ignore all this. See ya. Top protesting there, chaps and chappos. I said, well done, you've tucked me up like a sardine, and if you need me, I'll be in Sharm el-Sheikh wearing Bermuda shorts and chatting up foreign chicks.
A member of the Muslim Brotherhood even said, this smells like a military coup. And, yeah, that is a potent smell, Andy. If it was a perfume, it would have base notes of tear gas, tinges of butterscotch, and a faint whiff of tank exhaust.
Also my favourite Nirvana song as well.
Yeah, it's a heady bouquet. And in the face of all of this, Mubarak conspired to deliver a speech that was, to review it in the mildest possible terms, spectacularly misjudged. It really is impossible to overstate just how unexpected the content of Mubarak's speech on Thursday was. It took everyone by surprise, the media, the protesters, and the entire world. President Obama said earlier in the morning that this is a moment of transformation, evoking images of Mubarak making mechanical noises, turning into a robot, then turning into a haulage truck with wings, and then just flying away. And the Egyptian military had said that it is ready to respond to the legitimate demands of the people. The mood of protesters in Tahrir Square was incredibly festive. An Egyptian journalist tweeted, I'm in Tahrir Square. Mood is beyond euphoric. Saw a conga line chanting, Hosni's leaving tonight. And, I mean, on a side note, Andy, it's good to see that the conga transcends national lines. It is the international language of jubilation, the conga. And I wonder what place the conga has had throughout history at times when there were not cameras there to record its impact. When Jesus was crucified, were there Romans underneath the cross congering through the crowd? Things first started.
Well, no wonder they needed forgiveness. They know not what they did. They were just hammered. Just, you know, absolutely hammered.
Things first started looking suspicious when there was a substantial delay to the broadcast of Mubarak's speech. It was due to start at 8 p.m. but by 11 minutes past 8, Egyptian state TV was broadcasting a global weather forecast. That was definitely not what people were tuning in for. But I like the idea that it was just a determined, steely weatherman saying, hold on, people expect to hear the weather from me at 11 minutes past the hour every hour, and nothing is going to stop me delivering that weather to the people. Not you, not the bosses of this station, and not the millions of protesters outside calling for revolution. To them, I simply say this. Wrap up warm as there's a cold front coming in from the east. That's right. I read the f***ing weather. It's what I f***ing do. Now, here's Becky with the news in your area. Then at 21 minutes past 8, Mubarak was still not on state TV, and instead they started showing a promo film for Egypt. Basically a tourism video. Quite an odd time to advertise yourself as a holiday destination when your country is on the brink of political collapse. The video showed images of hard-working people, modern businesses, tourist sites, and sporting achievements. Now, that actually was very wise, Andy. Try to distract people with sport. It's humanity's Achilles heel. The BBC's Cairo correspondent even described the atmosphere in Tahrir Square as saying, it's a bit like a rock concert before the band comes on stage. But what it turned out to be was if the band had come on stage, refused to play any of the hits that the crowd explicitly wanted to hear, and instead started urinating on the front row.
Or if the band that the crowd had been expecting was Megadeth, and what they instead got was Karen Carpenter. But Obama had said earlier in the day, said we are witnessing history unfold. And as we watch Mubarak's speech, you're now thinking that often what happens when you unfold something to witness it, like when you unfold a handkerchief, you end up looking at some pretty unsavoury-looking mucus. And that's essentially what happened with Mubarak's speech. He did say some extraordinary things, including... But he said some extraordinary things. He started off by describing his speech as a father's dialogue with his sons and daughters. And that is certainly one paternity case that is being hotly disputed. And really his style of parenting that seems to have wound people up. I mean, it is always difficult, John, isn't it, for a father to accept that his kids have grown up and want to live their own lives now and don't really want him in their lives anymore. Every parent will go through that phase at some point when their children can no longer be repressed by the machinery of government. And I guess Egypt just has reached that point. He also said, I'm telling you that heeding to your voice, your message and demands is an irretraceable commitment. It did sound at that point that there was a but coming up, and it was a big old but. And then he said this sort of thing, which one of my favourite pieces of rhetoric of the modern era. He said this was really a bit like a modern-day Martin Luther King, but more so. He said, in response to the proposals in the committee's report and in compliance with the prerogatives of the President of the Republic, in conformity with Article 189 of the Constitution, I have submitted a request today asking for the amendment of 6 constitutional clauses, 76, 77, 88, 93 and 189, in addition to the annulment of Clause 179. Inspiring stuff, John, at which point a single shout went up in Tahrir Square. Bingo! And the crowd started chanting, what do we want? Amended constitutional clauses! When do we want them? Sometime in the next few months, please!
It's true. As soon as Mubarak started talking, it became clear that something was up. In fact, the crowd started getting restless as soon as he started talking about how great he was. He said, I was a young man as well when I joined the military and pledged to the nation and sacrificed to the nation. I spent my life defending Egypt's life and sovereignty. The best days of my life were when I raised the flag of Egypt over the Sinai and when I flew planes in Addis Ababa. There was no day when I was affected or when I gave in to foreign pressure. And it became clear he had all the humility of a West Coast rapper. As I started to watch...
Was he grabbing his balls at the time?
He was. And he was flanked with women in bikinis. As I started to watch the crowd turn from jubilation to anger, many waving their shoes in the air in disgust, I wondered, has a speech ever gone down worse to a crowd? But given his clear inability to gauge the mood of his country, maybe he thought he'd done a great job. Oh, look, they're waving their shoes at me. They must have loved it. Mr. President, waving the soles of your shoes at someone is the greatest imaginable sign of disrespect. Ah, nonsense. What they're trying to say is, look, even though I have only 2 shoes, I'm willing to offer you one of them. Such is my devotion. I will happily hop home, so happy am I, by what you've just said. Okay, Mr. President, I think I'm just going to pop home, pack my belongings and check that my family are alive.
I mean, it just show how much they loved him, John, because, you thought, that's even going beyond throwing your underwear at someone, isn't it? Throwing your shoes at someone, because, you can get home without underwear, but you're going to have to hobble home with only one shoe. He said some other things. He said, basically said, it's not about me. That's classic breakup talk as well. He said, I never sought fake popularity, and would appear that he's achieved that quite conclusively. And he also said, I trust that the overwhelming majority of the people know who Hosni Mubarak is. And, well, that's not really the point at issue, is it? Yeah. I mean, they certainly seemed to be chanting his name. It was what they were saying after that that was the problem.
That's right.
Obama said this will be a day of transformation and history will be unfolded. And, of course, it didn't actually happen that way. Well, it was a day early. But to be fair to him, he always says that. Every single day at breakfast, he says this will be a day of transformation and history will be unfolded. And it's just a habit he got into during the 2008 election campaign and he's just never quite managed to shake it.
But I've got to say, Andy, through all this, you have got to hand it to Hosni, because he managed to find a new way to handle imminent defeat. How do you leave as a dictator? It's a key decision to make, and there's no right answer offered by history. Do
you go
the Nicholas II route and get killed in a basement with your entire family? Do you go the Tunisian route and head for Euro Disney whilst making a pit stop at a bank to withdraw millions of dollars worth of gold bullion? Or do you go the way of Hitler, holding yourself up in a bunker, refusing to accept reality, and then eventually going through numerous cosmetic surgeries and living out the rest of your life as Shirley Bassey? Hosni...
She's still got a home in Argentina, do you know?
Hosni has rewritten the rule books. Now you can pull a Hosni and basically fake that you're about to leave before essentially blue-balling millions of protesters who are ready to celebrate your fall, then doing another couple of step-overs and leave the next day when no one expects you to.
Well, it's brilliant. Flawless. I mean, it's... of course, you know, he is well-known. To me, the Hosni Mubarak is the Egyptian celebrity best known as the author of the classic 1990 bestseller Mawqif al-Mufakirin al-Misriin min Azma al-Khalij Mubarak wa al-Damir al-Misri al-Azma al-Muwajaha al-Hal. And that was a real potboiler, John. That was something. It was an absolute page-turner. I read it in pretty much one sitting. So many plot twists. Kept me guessing the whole way. And surprisingly saucy, too. But, I mean, yesterday he was giving it the very much the talk to the army because the president ain't listening line. But... But he has now handed over, he's handed over power to his vice president, Omar Suleiman, who is, wait for it, the former head of the intelligence services. That sets alarm bells ringing, John. I don't know if that is what the crowd wanted. I mean, if you look back through history, former heads of intelligence services, well, they tend to be pretty sound guys who do everything by the book, will stop at nothing to help ordinary people express their opinions, and go to bed at night dreaming of nothing but free and fair elections. But that's who they've got, so I'll be interested to see... how it pans out. I think we can, looking back now, summarise the entire dialogue between the people of Egypt and their president, Little Hosni, as basically like this. People of Egypt, f*** off. Mubarak, f*** off. People of Egypt, f*** off. Mubarak, f*** off. People of Egypt, f*** off. Mubarak, f*** off. People of Egypt, f*** off. F*** off. F*** off. Off. Mubarak, f you, ah. People of Egypt, ah, f off. Mubarak, oh, f it. People of Egypt, f yeah.
Oh, Andy, it's been so hard to sum up what's happened over the last 17 days because it's moved so quickly and it's been so unstable, and I think you've done it. Cool. I think you've done what 24-hour news networks have been struggling with. I think you just did it.
That's right. Well, it's still an old, simple, kind of condensed version of history.
It's a good job I've got no social plans for the next 3 days of all that.
Yes, you better warm that bleeper finger up, Chris.
Well, I guess, you know, he was hanging on. I mean, there was a bit of confusion. He did say today, resign. Oh, resign. I thought you asked me to re-sign a new contract as president. My mistake, of course. I'll go straight away. He seemed to be concerned that if you take the top brick off the pyramid, the whole thing will fall down. I don't know if science backed him up on that.
So what next for Egypt? You know, so there was a massive protest today. It seemed like they might be moving towards the early stages of a messy revolution. And then, as you said, Mubarak said, ah, f*** it, basically. But... which was a surprise, because one analyst was saying on the news this morning, in Egyptian culture, you don't ask your father to leave the house. But, to be fair, the Egyptian people were no longer asking Mubarak to leave his house. They were, as you put it, telling him to go f*** himself.
Such a fine line, though, isn't it? You know, so much can get lost in translation.
And that's the problem. After yesterday, one thing's for sure, even with his resignation now, no one is going to trust a word that Mubarak says. Everything's going to have a sinister undertone. Even during his speech, when he said, the blood of the protesters will not be wasted, the first thing I thought was, oh, no. Oh, no, is he going to build some horrific blood fountain in his office?
Black pudding?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, assuming that Mubarak has now gone...
It could be a hoax.
It could be. What could the new administration... Look, I've got one eye on CNN now, expecting him to come back on TV and go, ah, ha, 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 got you again. What could a new administration look like? Well, Islam Lotfi, who is a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood Youth, he pointed in the New York Times towards the pluralistic model set in Turkey when asked a question, for instance, about alcohol, obviously forbidden in Islam. He suggested, well, drinking was a private matter, but that maybe it should be forbidden in public. And when asked if he could imagine an Egyptian president who was, for example, a Christian woman, he paused and said, if it is a government of institutions, I don't care if the president is a monkey. Whoa, hold on there. That is not an equivalent that you just drew. And if you think it is, that is a genuine problem. A Christian woman president would not necessarily spend her days demanding bananas and throwing her feces at people.
Not necessarily. Well, that's largely what Thatcher did for most of her last couple of years as yeah. Prime Minister over here.
So what about the US?
That's why they got double glazing in Downing Street.
The US over the last fortnight has been very anxious to try and be on the right side of history. But I think we can all safely conclude that that has not really worked out. They've been constantly backtracking from previous positions that they had previously backtracked into. And the awkward question seems to be, why was the US so hesitant for the Egyptians to have democracy when they seem to be so adamant that it's the one-size-fits-all solution for everywhere else? Do they think Egyptians can't be trusted with democracy? That they'd just go and vote for someone that they didn't really want? Or that they'd mess up the ballot papers? Or that they'd sleep through it or something? Because that was actually echoed by a vice president, and maybe current president, who knows, Solomon, earlier this week, when he said, the Egyptian people are not yet ready for democracy. Could he, or we, be treating them any more like children, Andy? You're not old enough as a nation for democracy. You just break it. First, you need to show us that you'll look after it. And then we're going to have to give them a provisional democracy license until we've taught them properly how to use it.
So, of course, as discussed in the last couple of weeks, the Bugle was the catalyst for this whole revolution.
Yeah.
We kicked it all off. It wouldn't have happened without us. A couple of quips back in Bugle 82, and the rest is history. We sowed those stroppy seeds, John, and you know, I guess we've been happy to take a back seat and let things grow organically since then. But... now, as leaders of the uprising, it's time to grasp this hot nettle and potato soup in the eye and issue Hosni Mubarak with a new opportunity. Because, you know, we've basically cost him his job. And, you know, I never like to see anyone lose a job. It's always a traumatic time. So I will invite Hosni now to come on the Bugle in 2 weeks' time. We're off next week. I guess he could come in and do a pre-record with you, Chris, or maybe meet up with me in Bangladesh at the cricket, if that suits him better. Or he could go and hang out with all the groupies at one of your gigs, John.
Yeah.
Just bring clean underwear if you want it signed. But anyway, come on the Bugle, Hosni, and explain why, having got you out of power, we should now help you get back into power. And also tell us who your favourite hottie from history is. What do you reckon, John? I think he's a patriot. I think he'd probably go with Cleopatra. Or maybe the first millennium mathematics sizzler, Hypatia of Alexandra. Oh, yeah, and her abacus. Hot dog. Or maybe the woman who put both the fair and the into Pharaoh, Hatshepsut. She could hire hieroglyphs any day of the decade. Sphinky dink, badinky sphinx. But I digress. The point is, Hosni, get back to us, come on the podcast, and nip this revolution in the bud before it gets out of control. Ooh. And bring in some signed merch.
So as I've said, Andy, I'm in LA, in West Hollywood, yep, at the moment, and it's hard to know how people here could give less of a shit about this news. I think the problem was that the news here had been distracted on Thursday with the bigger news that Lindsay Lohan may face a federal charge. So the Egyptian events got slightly buried in comparison. I'm sure they understand. But
well, to be
American...
fair, though, if you look at some of the placards in Tahrir Square, a lot of them were saying Lohan must face justice. You just didn't report it, then.
If America is confused about how to feel about this, imagine Hollywood's take, because this is a place that only deals in absolutes. Now, if Mubarak is a cartoon villain, that's fine. Maybe he could be played by Alan Rickman. But if he's a US ally, then he needs to be a rebel who is fighting valiantly against an unruly mob, Rambo style. Someone like Vin Diesel, if he'd be willing to grow a moustache. I know that Mubarak doesn't technically have a moustache, but I feel like he should have one, so that's just an editorial decision for later down the line. We may actually need the Sphinx to come to life to fight the protesters too. This is, I'm just spitballing here, there's no right answer.
Spitballing? You've been stateside too long, John. Other news now, and Catholics have got a new way to realise quite how appalling they are as human beings.
Well, that is not the objective analysis of this particular news story, Andy, but carry on.
I thought that's what Catholicism was all about, isn't it? You've got to be aware of it.
It kind of is.
I'm not saying they are. I'm just saying that it seems that their religion likes them to think that they are.
That is true. Yeah. Nice backtracking there,
Catholics,
Andy.
Catholics are lovely. I would happily eat one that's been properly cooked. There's now an iPhone confessions app, which apparently for $1.99,
yes.
It can't actually grant forgiveness. I mean, that, I guess, you only get if you jailbreak your phone.
Yeah.
But it's basically an app for you to just start confessing stuff. Problem is, I guess you just get hooked in by these apps and you start deliberately sinning in order to be able to use your iPhone a bit more, or just make shit up about what you've done. And the questions on this range from, have I wished evil on another person, to have I used any method of contraception or artificial birth control in my marriage?
Oh, for God's sake, Catholics.
And you check a box next to every sin that you've committed, and when that's done, the app lists all your sins and displays a written act of contrition and a prayer that you can recite as penitence.
I think I might. Yeah. I think I might do it. Maybe next week I'll do that, Andy. I'll download this app. Let's see how much we've sinned during that week and then what the punishment would be.
I think apparently there's a new update that will be out shortly which will give you a score out of 100 for how much of a sinner you are, a suggested guilt rating. And you can also now tweet your sins direct to the Vatican, where your confession will be broadcast on a ticker across the front of St. Peter's. Also, if you jailbreak your phone, you can confess other people's sins for them. Your phone can flagellate you like a naughty monk. And it can also give you a list of suggested sins you might like to consider perpetrating in any given social situation. But it was inevitable, John. You think, omniscient, omnipresent, alarmingly able to intrude into your private life. If nothing else, God was the forerunner of the mobile internet. His signal quality isn't always the best. I certainly live in a reception black spot. But he was there first, John. He was there first.
Romania update now, and we may remember, first major update, still no Dracula. So he's still not surfaced, so they must, presumably the Romanians are still hiding him like Radovan Karadzic.
I went to his house.
Did you?
Yeah. Castle Brad, I think it's called.
Castle Brad? I'm guessing it's not called Castle Brad.
Hang on, I'll just have to check that.
Yeah, I'll try again, because that seems like a terrible guess.
Yeah, it was an Australian surfer castle. Bugle feature section now, and, this is the Bugle for Monday the 14th of February, and that means only one thing. Romance is in the air, messages of clandestine affection will zip around the world, and millions of people will experience the crushing disappointment of rejection. It's Valentine's Day, and it's always difficult to know what to say on Valentine's Day if you're trying to woo a potential partner. And it's also difficult if you get a card, reading between the lines, because they're quite obscure and cryptic, a lot of these messages. So here's the Bugle guide to what Valentine's messages really mean. You are my sunshine means I haven't seen you since last August and you make my skin burn. And judging by the tan on my next door neighbour's face, you've been all over him like a rash. You are my angel means you dress funny, you're a bit too feathery and you probably don't exist. I'll always be with you. I implanted a tracking device under the skin behind your left ear whilst you were asleep, and I've got a PI hacking into your phone and emails just to keep tabs on you. You are my world means most things about you are really depressing. The future doesn't look good. You're full of pain, suffering, anger, and a baffling fascination with celebrities. You are my prince, or you are my princess, means you are a financial drain on my resources, a relic from a time long past who have no relevance to the modern world, and you expect to be driven everywhere in a massive car. Jeez, what is it with you? We are meant to be together means I'm your lawyer, you're my client, you're half an hour late for court, the judge is getting cranky and you're starting to look very guilty. You have opened the doors of my heart means, are you sure you're a qualified surgeon? It's just my previous guy didn't use a hacksaw and seemed a little bit calm around the operating table. And finally, be my Valentine means, learn to bowl like the 1950s West Indian left arm spinner, Alf Valentine, or I want nothing to do with you.
If that, Andy, is not a new range of greetings cards, then I don't understand the world we live in anymore.
But if you do want to avoid the pain of rejection, I suggest that you go with something that isn't too ambitious, just a safe, you're okay, but I can probably live without you. Or, I've seen better looking people, but you scrub up fine, and I think about you every month. And just also give, you know, if you want to give a Valentine's gift to someone, it's very difficult. And we all know Valentine's Day is mostly about dangerously flammable underwear and novelty chocolate todgers. But it can be so much more than that. And this week's suggested Bugle Valentine's gift is the Bugle. Show someone you really love them by informing them of the existence of the Bugle. And showing them how to use iTunes. Oh, that can build any relationship. It got Wibbly and Levine back together, didn't it?
That's true.
Are they back together still? Lost track of it.
Your emails now, and well, we only have time for a quick email due to just how interesting Egypt has been as an evolving news story. And this is it's a good one, and it's worth having. It's the subject line is simply this: God shows the universe the bird. So straight away, you've got your full undivided attention on this email. And Joe Farrington says, hello, John, Chris and Andy, in order of likelihood of being made to disappear if they ever visit Egypt. Please find attached a picture of the molecular cloud Carina Nebula. Not a massively interesting start to an email until you open said picture and see final definitive proof of the existence of God and the fact that he, she, them loves flipping the bird. As the nebula is around 10,000 light years away, this bird was flipped around the same time as humanity was domesticating pigs, goats and dogs. This could be seen as a very mild rebuke to these discoveries by God. Maybe he was a bit sleepy when he found out about them and thought to himself, I really can't be arsed with floods and fires and plagues. I know, I'll show my annoyance with this gesture, and thus the bird was born. It's a damn shame that I'm an atheist now, as every time I flip the bird, I'll be subconsciously showing that there is a God. Joe Farrington. I mean, that is... But the picture is spectacular. Andy, yeah. I believe you've just tweeted it.
I have, yeah. I've tweeted it, John. So check it out really at Hello Buglers on Twitter.
It's beautiful. It's a universe in its most magnificent and most contemptuous.
I don't know if that's what any of the astronauts said. Oh, so it's beautiful up it. Hang on! So do keep emails coming into the Bugle at timesonline.co.uk and we'll have more next time. Just time for a quick bit of sports. John, the Super Bowl. That was good, wasn't it? It was super. It lived up to his name. Yeah,
it was a really good game, Andy. Slightly ruined by Christina Aguilera's mangling of the national anthem, but, you know, sport will overcome all.
Well, you know, these things got to evolve, John. If that's how Aguilera sees, you know, deems her nation to be how it should be sung about, then who are we to argue with on this?
And she's slightly evolved the words. Andy, instead of saying, oh, the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, she sang, what so proudly we watched at the twilight's last reaming, which... I mean, maybe that's the way it should be now.
Yeah.
Maybe she's just evolving linguistically as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she knows pretty much everything, doesn't she?
Now, what do you think of the halftime show, Andy? I mean, I know you're a big fan of Black Eyed Peas.
Well, yeah, it was absolutely sensational. I mean, what did it mean? That's what I was, you know, what did it mean?
That is the key
question. So hard interpreting.
Not how was
dance,
it, what does it mean?
Yeah. How did it go down in the States?
Well, I think people were just mystified as to why they didn't play My Humps.
Yeah.
Now, you've got what amounts to a greatest hits package, My Humps.
Yeah.
I think people just assumed they were going to come back at the end of the game and sing it.
Well, maybe they're saving that for next year's Super Bowl.
Maybe that's it. Just play My Humps 17 times and then leave.
Yeah. But I think for my next Edinburgh show, I will end up with 1,000 people standing around in flashing costumes. You know, going through lots of different colours. I think that's appropriate for Andy Zaltzman's comedy.
Yep. Next step, Andy. Logical next step.
Are you doing it next year?
Am I doing Edinburgh?
No, the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh. Yeah, but only if I can. Only if they'll dress you up in a light suit.
Well, if that makes it happen, John, I'm happy to do it. And the Cricket World Cup starts this coming week, and I'm going to be there.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm going to be away from Britain for.
Have we revealed this, Andy?
Have I mentioned it on the Bugle?
Bit of a mention.
Yeah.
Andy's about to go on quite an impressive adventure.
Yeah, so I'm going around the Cricket World Cup, for those of you who are living terribly misappropriated lives. That doesn't really make sense. Those of you basically whose lives have gone wrong and don't follow cricket. That's the only real explanation for why you wouldn't follow cricket. The Cricket World Cup is starting. It's in Bangladesh, India and Sri Lanka, and I'm going out there to write about it and talk about it for Crick Info, the website that I have, blog for. And I've never travelled on my own. I've never sort of watched cricket overseas.
Yeah.
It's basically going to be like having a proper job. I'm going to have to do a thing or two a day. When that's, that's not going to come easy, is it?
Yeah, I don't know how close it is to a proper job.
Isn't that what most people's proper jobs involve? Trawling around the Asian subcontinent with a backpack. Well,
it used to be.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a trip of a lifetime.
So when are you leaving?
I'm leaving on Tuesday via Dubai. I will be going to Dubai. I'll be reporting. I'll try and record my reaction to the fucking stupid buildings in Dubai for the next Bugle. So we're off next week. I think we'll put something out in the gap, and then we're back with a full Bugle, which I will be recording in Bangalore, I think, in southern India. So we'll be bugling from India, Sri Lanka, and Bangladesh over the next couple of months. So.
It's going to be very exciting. I do hope you're able to record some dispatches as well, Andy.
Yeah.
Of various ridiculous things that you see.
So, yeah, the Bugle's going to go massive. It's going to be huge. Huge in Bangladesh.
The Bugle goes on tour.
Yeah. So do follow my cricket blogs, and I'll update you on the Bugles over the next few weeks of how I get on. And I'll try not to keep it too gastric.
Yeah. Well, bon voyage, Andy.
Thanks, John. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks very much. To see you there.
Yeah, see you out in Bangladesh.
Yeah, cool.
That's what you've kind of ruined my surprise drop in there as well. It was quite expensive. I was going to parachute out of a plane as well.
This is the top tourist destination of the millennium so far, isn't it?
So they say.
Yeah. Just going to catch some rays.
None of the people that say that work for any tourist company. Well, so good. Farewell, Andy.
Thanks, John.
Safe travels. Yeah. And we'll speak to you in 2 weeks.
Yep. Bye-bye, Buglers.
Bye-bye, Buglers.
Bye-bye.